Today's August 29th, 2015. This is Comics News Podcast number 74. I'm Todd Ogasawart, my good friend Jay Stone. We haven't been here in a while. It's been about 6 weeks since Podcast 73, but we're back. This podcast is all about the Ant-Man movie, but first, Jay and I got a couple of things to get off our chests for the disaster that is the 2015 Fantastic Four movie, which got a huge, 9% from the critics on Rotten Tomatoes. Their average rating, 9%, as in 9, and that's all. It barely got a little bit better reaction from the audience, which gave it 21%, which is terrible, right? I mean, that's just terrible.
Yeah, you know, sometimes the critics will be not liking the movie, right?
Right.
But, you know.
And the audience does.
Right?
Yeah.
So just to put this in comparison, the current Fantastic Four, the critic.
Right.
Was 9%, right?
Right, correct.
The one in 2005,
yeah.
The first one. Hey, wait. The current Fantastic Four, 9% from critics, 21% from people.
Right.
Okay. The Fantastic Four in 2005, 27% from critics, 46% from people.
So a little bit better.
And this made like over $100 million.
That's true. It was financially, I guess you could call it successful. They did make a second one.
Yes. And then Rise of the Silver Surfer, which was an awful film.
Awful.
But it rated higher than the first Fantastic Four.
What?
By the critics. Yeah, I'm on Rotten Tomatoes right now. Right now. It 37%.
Which is still bad.
It's still bad, but better than the first Fantastic Four. All
right.
And 51%, marginally better than the first Fantastic Four.
Right, right.
Right? So those are the two that actually made over each, I know, made over $100 million.
Right.
I mean, they were financially very successful. Artistically, maybe not so much, right?
Yeah.
And then you get to the current one, 9% and 21%. I mean, that's just, yeah. It didn't even get half the audience score of the very first crappy Fantastic Four movie.
Right, which is awful. And this was, I should say, I did see the first Fantastic Four movie, the 2005. I didn't even bother paying out whatever it costs these days to go to the movie to see the 2015 version. Because I knew I wouldn't like it.
Yeah, I didn't either. I've seen so many things like, what did they do wrong with Fantastic Four?
I know, it's funny.
Did you know the thing doesn't have pants?
I saw that on YouTube. One of the reviewers on YouTube pointed it out, and I said, oh my goodness, what were they thinking? Or perhaps they weren't, so that explains a lot.
I mean, what's up with that?
Hey, you know what? Maybe they're thinking, hey, Donald Duck doesn't have pants. The Thing doesn't have pants. He also doesn't. But at least Donald Duck wears a vest.
Yes. He has a top. Yeah. And he has a hat.
And a hat. The Thing could use a hat. you know, I should point out that if the director had listened to our podcast number 46 way back in January 19, 2014... he could have saved himself a lot of trouble and possibly a lot of money.
Oh yeah, and you know what? One of the people online, one of the bloggers or whatever, mm-hmm. I don't know. I read somewhere online that what went wrong with the Fantastic Four, among many things.
Right.
And one person said the Fantastic Four is fun. Fantastic Four is a family.
Yep.
Which is what we said, right?
Right.
Got to be a family. It can be a modern family, this mixed family. I'm okay with that. But you know, what? Everything I've heard is that they didn't even focus on that part, really.
Yeah.
That the four of them are the family. You know.
Right.
It's so sad because, I mean, look, I'm not even a big Fantastic Four fan from the comics, but they're a classic group. They deserve better than this.
Oh, absolutely.
And a lot of their stories, especially the early ones, right? They're seminal classics. They're great stories. They're awesome stories.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The best books I've ever read of the Fantastic Four is when they focus on Reed, the dynamics between Reed and Sue and their children, and then the play between Ben and Johnny and how they make fun of one another and all that kind of stuff. They're unique in the comic book world of how close they are as a family. They're like, what was it? One critic online was saying, there's already a template they could have used. Right?
Can you guess
the one that he chose?
The Incredibles, right?
Yes! The Incredibles! Which was really a pastiche, right? Fantastic Four. And they got it right. It was a family who were trying to make it through the world, right? Even in the comic, they have regular family issues. They have family problems. They're trying to raise their kids. They're just trying to make it day-to-day as a family. It's just that you get someone who's like 100 feet tall, right? Or you get aliens from another dimension who come and steal people or whatever or hurt them. That's the only difference. Otherwise, they're just like anyone else.
Right. So what do you think? Fantastic Four number two?
No, but you know, I've read online, right? A lot of people are hoping this would happen.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're hoping that this will force...
Fox.
Sony or Fox?
Yeah, I think it's Fox.
It'll force Fox to give Fantastic Four back to Marvel, and then they can integrate them like how they're integrating
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
Yep.
Right? You know. Which I think, one guy said, hey, wouldn't it be great to finally see the Thing and Hulk go at it on the screen? Which would probably be fun.
It would. I mean, they were classic fights in our comic books. And I should note that when the Fantastic Four movie opened, instead of spending my hard-earned money on the ticket for this terrible thing, I instead took advantage of a Comixology sale and bought the Fantastic Four Masterworks collection for, I think, $4. So I think I made out like a bandit on that one.
That's cheap. The Masterworks series, those are like a lot of comics, right?
Oh, yeah. I think it's, I don't know, maybe 15, 16 stories, something like that. A lot of stories collected.
Are they in color or are they black and white?
Oh, it's in color.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know sometimes when they put them like in those really, really big compendiums, they make them black and white.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah. And these are digital in any case, so.
Yeah.
But at any rate, so enough of that. What's his name? See, I don't even, I'm blocking his name. Director of Fantastic Four.
Josh Trank.
There you go. Trank.
Come on, man. Okay.
Trank, go back to in our podcast list, January 19, 2014, podcast number 46. Listen to us.
Yeah. And the thing is, isn't that lame what he did? Tanked his own movie?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. How much money did you get? And you can't keep your mouth shut?
Yeah.
The critics already said it. You don't need to distance yourself anymore. You don't need to explain it to anyone. You know, you messed up. It's not all the studio's fault. Cannot be.
No, I can't imagine.
You're there. You know, now I'm really glad he didn't get the Star Wars movie.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
He was going to get one of those one-offs, right? One of the spin-off ones.
Right.
And thank God Lucasfilm and Disney, you know, saw the light and went, this guy can't do it.
Maybe they saw the rushes from Fantastic Four.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I don't want to do this movie.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to a movie we did like, Ant-Man 2015 movie, Marvel movie. 79% Rotten Tomatoes from the critics, 90% from the audience. So both groups liked it. The audience liked it a little bit more. That's not too unusual, except for the really artsy movies where the critics like it more than the audience. You know, popular movies, usually critics are a little bit more, well, critical than the audience. I certainly enjoyed it. My as a comic book fan, as an Ant-Man, you know, I don't know if I'm a big Ant-Man fan, but as a fan of the character, and my wife and daughter, who had pretty much never heard of the character, enjoyed it too.
Which one do you more relate with?
Hank Pym.
No. In terms of the ratings, the critics or the people?
I think I would side with the critics. It was a good movie, but to me, 90% rating is a great movie. I would say it was a good, solid, entertaining movie. I wouldn't classify it as great.
Yeah, I would. I'd kind of split it down the middle. I'd say I'd give it 85. You know?
Yeah.
I'd average it. Because, I mean, I thought 79, I thought, oh, it's better than 79. But it's not, I don't think it's 90.
You know, 79 is a good rating for a movie, I think. I mean, that's a very solid substantial, you know, average from a, I don't know how many critics they average over, but it's quite a few. It's a couple dozen, I think.
Yeah, I liked it a little bit more than 79, but not as much as 90.
Yeah, well, let me put it this way. It wasn't as good as, and I'm thinking of something similar in its lightness, and, you know, that would be Guardians of the Galaxy, which I thought was a great movie.
Oh, yeah. I rewatched it like a week or so ago, because we bought it on iTunes.
Right.
It gets a little long. Even when I first saw it, I thought it was a little long, but there's just so many really good scenes. I just, all the way up to the end, I really loved that movie.
And past the end.
Yeah, you know, I still think it's better than Avengers.
Yeah, I remember you saying that when we reviewed that movie.
It definitely better than Age of Ultron, I'll say that much.
I agreed with that. Well, and, you know, I thought it was interesting that for the Ant-Man, they chose to cast a comedic actor as they did in Jurassic World and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. But you know,
and it worked. To me, it worked.
Yeah, it did work. He's a good actor, though.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good actor.
Yeah, I enjoyed his portrayal. I thought he had the right look for Scott Lang. You know, not a perfect, of course. You know, but none of them are. I would say, you know, one thing I did note is that he is, I mean, he doesn't look his age, first of all, but he's kind of old for an actor who's going to need to portray this character at least two more times. Maybe he's 46 years old now. So, you know, he's going to be like near 50 when he hits Ant-Man 2. And, you know, we've got to be sure there's Ant-Man 2 in the works.
Oh, yeah. It was too good of a movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole thing with, like, the first director leaving and the new director, I didn't think that too much of it. You know, I thought that the was it Peyton Reed who finally directed it? Whoever it was. I think it was Peyton Reed. Whatever. I thought, you know, he really did a good job. And I have a feeling that the other guy may have been a little too artsy or whatever, a little too different.
Yeah, you know, I don't know anything about either director, the one that was the original and left and the current one. All I know is the current one did a good job. And I wish, the only thing I wish is we could have gotten rid of Josh Trank from Fantastic Four. I'm sure that would have improved it a lot. But, no, I really did enjoy it, even though, you know, for me at least, as an older comic book fan, it was so different from the continuity I'm familiar with, as has really, you know, all the other Marvel movies. But still, I enjoyed it, which is a good sign to me that, you know, you can change it to something I'm not familiar with as a comic book fan, and yet I'm saying, okay, that's fine. I'm okay with it. How about you?
Yeah. Well, I've never been a big Ant-Man fan from the comic. I just thought it was a silly character. But I liked this movie a lot.
Okay, now wait a minute. Okay, you say that. What about the Atom in the DC comic books? Did you think Atom was a silly character too?
Oh, no.
So it's not the size change, not the shrinking part you found silly. It was just literally the character itself.
It's the name. It's like the joke in the movie, right? That's not a spoiler. It's in the...
Right.
It's in the preview, right?
Right, right.
He goes, Ant-Man. Yeah. He says something like, yeah, I know. I didn't choose a name. Something like that.
Right.
It's a silly name. That's all it is. The Atom is a much better name. You know? They could have chosen anything, right? Really? But, you know, when Stan Lee and... Did Jack Kirby create this one, too?
You know, I'm trying to remember. I think it was Jack Kirby.
You know, they created the Ant-Man. I'm like, oh. It's a horrible name, and then they make fun of it in the film because it isn't a good name, you know. So that's the only reason, not because of the shrink. I like shrinking characters that shrink and can do things.
Right.
Like Legion of Superheroes, Shrinking Violet. There's a Doll Man, right, from the Quality Comics,
right?
Freedom Fighters. Yeah, I think those can be very interesting characters. Because it's like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and then you got to deal with all these bigger things. Oh, right. I love that kind of stuff.
Oh, by the way, there's also a TV show, Land of the Giants, that was
called. Oh, yeah!
Yeah.
Is it on Netflix?
You know, I don't think so. I've never seen it since I was a kid, really.
I think I've only seen, like, maybe one.
Yeah.
Because it came out, I came out, I I was born after it came on.
Right.
So I may have only seen like one or two episodes ever.
By the way, I just checked on Wikipedia, and according to it, Ant-Man was created by three people: Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Larry Lieber, who is Stan Lee's brother.
Oh. Okay.
Yep. So we got it 2/3 right and just missing one.
Yeah.
But so. In any case, yeah, it was interesting to me, and I'll get into it a little bit, but I found it interesting that they changed the motive for Scott Lang's criminal behavior, in the beginning of the movie, right? They attributed it to, he was kind of like a whistleblower, right? He was trying to expose something in the company he was working for.
Yeah, I think so.
And ended up going to mail. In the comics, he was trying to make enough money to pay for his daughter's illness, which was killing her, terminal illness. So, and there's no illness in the movie. I don't know why they decided to change that, but maybe make him more heroic from the beginning.
But flawed.
But flawed, right.
Yeah, you got to have that flaw, right?
And then, and this part, I don't know how you feel about it, but you know when they do kind of the flashbacks or whatever it is with Hank Pym as the first Ant-Man in the 1970s, I think they said it?
Well, yeah, we're in spoiler town now already.
Yeah. And I said at the beginning, we're going to do spoilers, because this movie has been out, a month and a half now, something like that?
Yeah, it's been out for a while.
Yeah, but all the videos were in black and white. And I couldn't figure out because it looked very much like World War II instead of the 1970s. And I couldn't figure out if they were trying to say that the closed circuit TV videos we were looking at were in black and white. Because that's true, right? A lot of CCTV is in black and white because it's cheaper to store it that way.
Yeah.
Or, they were just kind of confusing the 1940s and 1970s, kind of the Captain America kind of flashback. I don't know. What did you think about that? The use of flashback to show Hank Pym as the original Ant-Man? I liked it. I was just thrown off by the black and white part.
Oh, I didn't even notice that part. I liked it. I thought it was neat how they made him, they did like a Tron. What was it? Tron Legacy or whatever it was called. How they took the actor and they made his face young.
Oh yeah, the de-aged Michael Douglas.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty. I liked that part. I thought that was pretty cool. The flashback parts. I thought those were fine. The thing is, I don't remember Ant-Man having that much power.
What do you mean?
Well, like the way they explain it, the suit doesn't just shrink you, right?
Right.
Kind of made it kind of like the Atom, where you have like the Atom can basically condense his mass.
Right. So he's smaller in volume, but his mass remains constant.
Right. So like when you jump. He jumps at someone, it's like you have this tiny little thing, but it's like a 150-pound man.
Right.
On 1 inch of your
body. Right, focused in a very small space.
Right, and they kind of did something like that with in the movie, but I'm not familiar enough with his powers in the comics if that's how it was portrayed. Is that how it's portrayed?
I'm trying to remember too now, and I think he did retain the strength of a normal-sized man, kind of like Adam does.
Yeah,
but it really wasn't played up as much. In the comics, they really played the cybernetic helmet control of the ants more than Ant-Man himself, going into action. He was more like the Aquaman of tiny people, animals, right?
Yeah. What I thought was interesting is how they got us to care for the ants.
Oh, yeah.
Even though they're fake, right?
Right, but no, they had personality.
Yeah. I didn't expect that, to be honest. I really didn't expect that.
That's a good point. I didn't really think of that, but I too was very fond of the ants at the end.
Yeah, when...
Individually, I should say.
Yeah. When the one dies,
yeah,
he's writing. My daughter was like, what? She actually, she's 14, right?
Yeah.
But, that means that the film was able to make a connection with a completely fake character.
Right.
Also happens to be an insect that you would normally kill.
Right.
Right?
Right. Or make you care about it.
Yeah,
which is more than we can say for the four main characters of Fantastic Four.
Exactly, right? No, really. That says something about the film, about the director, about the performances. When they can, you get so invested in it as a viewer, right, as an audience member, that when something you normally would just step on, you actually care for.
Yeah, that's true.
That's really deft directing, I think.
That is true. Now, what did you think about the Hank? You know, we spoke briefly about Scott Lang and his motives and all that. And I really like the kind of lighthearted take on him. What did you think of Hank Pym? You know, Hank Pym in the comics has always been a very complicated character. And I think they brought that to the movie a little bit. But I like Michael Douglas as an actor. I've enjoyed his work in the past. I enjoyed his work in this movie. But there's something... I didn't feel comfortable with Hank Pym in the movie, although I did like the Ant-Man parts of it. And I think part of it is he was kind of the stereotypical hero billionaire in the movie and in the comics. My recollection is he was kind of in this little lab working all by himself, with Janet visiting now and then. And that part of it threw me off. You know, he was the founder of a giant scientific research company, which would make sense when you think about what he had invented.
Well, yeah, if you really think about it, how he is in the comics never makes sense. It's like Peter Parker inventing this unique compound that no one in the world can generate,
right,
but is being strong as steel, but will melt over time.
Right, but he can't make rent every month.
That made no sense, right? It's the same thing with Hank Pym, right? One of the most brilliant men on the planet, right?
Right.
Still stuck in this lab. So he doesn't have a business mind, but come on. I think he's going to have a little bit more than what you see in the comic.
Yeah.
So in some ways, the film is a little more, I don't know if realistic, but more believable than the background you might see in the comic. But I agree. It's almost like he's the older Iron Man. He's the old Tony. He's
yes.
Like an older Tony Stark. Yes. It's like if Tony Stark's dad was still alive, that maybe that's what he would be,
right?
Kind of thing, and that's how I took it. It was kind of like a contrast to what Tony Stark is, right? Because they're essentially kind of the same, right? Both made suits, both brilliant, both very successful businessmen, right?
Right.
One chooses the showboat, right?
Right. And at least I don't think we've seen it in Iron Man yet, but you know, both lose their companies.
Yeah, right. And then, but the Hank Pym they created for Ant-Man is pretty much the same, just older, but has a much greater sense of duty. But I shouldn't say duty. He's just a little more. He's more serious.
Mm.
He's not trying to showboat. He doesn't think much of Iron Man. Did you? This is
yes.
Not. What was that line?
Oh gosh, I can't remember. But I know what you're referring to.
I mean, he was dissing the Iron Man suit, you know, and so that tells you that he comes from a very different perspective than, say, Tony Stark.
Yeah.
And Tony Stark's character in the movies does care a lot and everything. It's just the way he goes about it is in such contrast to what you would expect as. Hank Pym's character in the movie is the elder statesman, you know, the sophisticated, older, wise man kind of character.
Well, and you know, it's interesting that he references Tony Stark because in at least the Marvel movie universe, Tony Stark replaces Hank Pym as the creator of Ultron.
Yes.
So, and as I said, that's bothered me a little bit, but it, you know, within the Marvel movie universe, it makes sense.
It does, but I didn't like it. That's one of the reasons why I didn't like Age of Ultron. It's like Hank Pym should have created Ultron.
It would have been an interesting way to introduce him in a movie. Actually, in the movies, actually, you know, introduce him in Avengers. What was that? 2, and was it 2 or 3? I can't even remember now. But Avengers 2, and then you know, and then debut him in full in the movie, in Ant-Man.
Yeah, that would have been great. Even if he doesn't completely create Ultron,
right.
Say he starts his Ultron project years ago with the father.
Right.
Tony Stark's dad, right?
Right.
And Tony Stark, I want to control the world or whatever. I want to save people. So, hey, my dad worked on something. I'll use this. And, you know,
I could see that working really well into the film.
Okay. Now, speaking of working into the film and storyline, so there are two major things. One, I assume, is going to lead into Ant-Man 2. And the second one will lead into Captain America 3. So what did you think of that lost Janet Pym story, Wasp storyline, where Wasp has, you know, disappeared in probably, what, the 1970s, it looks like?
I didn't like it. But, you know, when he gets really small.
Yeah.
I was really hoping that he either finds her and brings her back.
Right.
Or at least he finds evidence that she was there.
Right.
If not necessarily alive. The fact that he doesn't contact her at all, there's not even any evidence that she still exists. I didn't like that. I thought they missed an opportunity. I thought they should have put in some kind of, what do they call it, Easter egg, something.
Yeah.
Just something. And then it would have, even if it he doesn't see it, that the audience sees it.
Mm.
I was looking. When he got really small, I was looking to see if I could see, oh, do you see the Wasp flying around? But I didn't notice anything.
Yeah, although it'd be kind of hard to explain how she survived, 40 years? Something like that.
Hey, maybe it's like Sword of the Atom.
Could be.
That's what I was hoping as he got, when he got smaller, I was hoping that it wouldn't just be like what they showed, that it'd be this other fantasy world like Sword of the Atom. I thought that would have been pretty cool.
Somewhere to go look for the lost Janet Pym in the next movie.
Yeah. I really want her to come back.
Me too.
I do. And I've never even seen her except, I've never seen her. She's only been in a suit.
Right. We don't see the actress without the mask.
Yeah, there's no photos of the mom.
No.
Nothing.
No. Which is probably by plan, right? Because they haven't cast a character yet.
Yeah.
So, and what did you think of the other characters in the movie? I mean, there's some, you know, the baddies in the 1970s who flash forward into the, you know, current day. And the daughter. I didn't like the daughter's character.
I liked the character. I didn't like her haircut. No, it's ever since I saw the previews, it was bothering me.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't like it. I don't think she looks good that way. It didn't to me fit in with the character. I didn't like it. The rest of the character I enjoyed. Her portrayal. The best part of the thing that made this movie good was the supporting cast.
It was a good cast. Both the good guys and the bad guys.
Yeah, and that the supporting cast, especially the, you know, his criminal friends.
Yeah.
Oh,
they were good.
They were, you know.
The comic relief was excellent and well done.
Yeah, and it's like, you're in the system. You're in the system. I'm in the system. It was, I like to go online and find that clip and just watch it. It's so hilarious. Okay, this is how bad Ant-Man was in terms of a name. I could only get my older daughter to come with me. Because she likes comic book movies.
Okay.
My wife and my younger daughter just didn't want to do it.
Just because of the name?
The name and the cost. It's Ant-Man. How good can it be? I don't want to watch it.
They missed out, in my opinion.
Well, my daughter, older daughter, and I saw, I think, big opening night, maybe. Right. Where, you know. And so I told my wife and my younger daughter, go see it. You don't want to spend a lot of money, go see it at the matinee. Just go see it.
Yeah.
Gonna think it's worth it. I told my wife, it's like Guardians of the Galaxy, but with the less people.
Very true.
You know, it's that kind of tone of a film.
It's a light, I mean, it's got its dark moments, but it's a very light-hearted character in many ways. And yeah, as we said at the beginning of the movie, it's very much like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, so I was like, you really should see it. And they both were very satisfied.
Good.
They really enjoyed it. And we still talk about it, you know, the way the characters talked and everything. And then the we like how the director made fun of the fact that they're small. How they're fighting, right? And it looks, when they're small, it looks really terrifying. But then he zooms out to like what we would see.
Right.
And it's like nothing. Right? Because the train comes at Yellow Jacket and it just kind of falls off.
Right.
and they make the train really huge.
You know, that's funny. You know, I think that really does help with the movie. In fact, there's a quote by Stan Lee that I was reading recently, where he's talking about Ant-Man and why it never became a major character, and he says, and he's kind of throwing his artist under the bus, but you know, so you know, I don't know how true this is or not, but Stan Lee, you know, one of the three co-creators, said that he kept telling the artist to make sure to draw everyday objects looking gigantic, you know, like a roll of tape or something, next to Ant-Man, to bring out the scale and remind people that he's really tiny in a, you know, in a normal sized world. But Stan Lee claims that the artist never remembered what he asked, and so it looked like he was just, you know, just another costumed guy without very many powers, you know, in terms of if you don't consider him to be very tiny. And so that he says that's why Ant-Man never became popular, because people never had the scale. In the movie, we had a lot of scale when he shrunk. I mean, it was very, very dramatic.
Oh yeah, it was really dramatic until they pulled the camera out and you saw how silly it was.
Right.
And I say that, and you know, if people get offended, whatever. I don't mean it in a derogatory way. It's just the fact. That's what when he's experiencing that fight with Yellow Jacket, for him it's so real.
On the model train track.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's for him it's surreal, but not surreal. It's very real to him, and it's a serious fight. I think the what the director understood was that it is a silly character in a lot of ways. And in order for people to really enjoy it, you have to have that terror juxtaposed to the fact that they really are very small. Mm-hmm. And that maybe I shouldn't read too much into this, but it's like they're fighting this massive war on a small scale, right? It's a massive war, mega fight, right? It's big, it's loud, right? And that tiny fight in reality dictates so much else around them. And the juxtaposition back and forth creates the humor, but at the same time, if you really think about it, it's also demonstrating that even though they're really, really small, right, their fight is actually very, very important.
Right.
You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm reading into it too much.
I don't think so. And, you know, interestingly, it also maybe provides a contrast to the next experience. Next time we see Ant-Man, which will be in the next Captain America movie, number 3, which will be Civil War, which will be something gigantic in scale.
And he better die. I'm sorry. Just like Hank Pym needs to be the creator of Ultron. I can forgive all the other changes, but he better be the creator of Ultron.
Well, he can't die, right? Otherwise, there's no Ant-Man 2. And Ant-Man 1 was so popular, there's got to be Ant-Man 2.
But I'm saying Captain America better die.
Oh, Captain America, okay.
He needs to die. If it's Civil War, at some point in whatever the Civil War movie's in, he's got to die. If he doesn't die, that's just not doing a good service to the story.
I was thinking, because isn't it, and you know, I didn't read Civil War, but I think I read somewhere that is it Hank Pym or Scott Lang? Okay, one of them gets replaced by a Skrull, right?
I didn't read all of Civil War. I just remember I remember reading The Death of Captain America.
Okay.
And he gets shot, and then he gets all shrunken because as he dies, the effects of the super soldier serum wear off, and he becomes a scrawny guy again. Mm. But, I mean, that's what has to end up happening in Civil War. Otherwise, it doesn't have any – it has to have that tragedy where people really wake up and realize that the Superhuman Registration Act is wrong. When someone like Captain America fights against it and then dies because of it. Yeah.
Well, here's my prediction, okay? And I'm not trying to be – well, let me reverse that. I am trying to be logical in terms of how these guys want to make money. So we know – Captain America is a third, and if they do a trilogy arc, this is the end of Captain America. That's kind of, you know, at least the movie series, right? If they do a three movie arc, which is kind of typical. But we also know they're probably going to have to do, they're going to have to do the Avengers 3 with, you know, against Thanos. And I can't see them going up against Thanos without Captain America. So I think they're going to have to somehow merge the Civil War and Thanos storylines. So Captain America survives into Avengers 3, but maybe dies in Avengers 3.
No, I think what's going to happen is what happened in the comic. Bucky becomes Captain America.
Winter Soldier?
Yeah, Winter Soldier gets... In the comic books, Winter Soldier's been rehabilitated for a long time, right?
Yeah.
The Marvel Cinematic Universe, he hasn't.
Right.
So I think what's going to happen is during Civil War, he's going to change. And he's going to get rehabilitated, and then Captain America dies, and he takes over.
That would make sense. That would make sense.
And I hope that happens, because I think that would make it for – not just because it's closer to the comic, but I think that makes for a better story than trying to draw out Captain America all the way to Avengers 3.
Well, we'll see. We've got Avengers 3 is what, 2017, 2018?
I don't know.
So we've got a while to go. Captain America 3 Civil War is next summer? I want to say next summer. 2016. So we'll find out. We'll find out next summer what happens in Captain America, what happens in Ant-Man, what happens to a lot of people, really. Iron Man. Okay.
Iron Man's trilogy is done already, right?
What's that?
Iron Man's trilogy is already done.
That's right. Iron Man 3 has come and gone.
Right, which is...
So
there's all that controversy with the Mandarin and all...
Right, Tony Stark / Iron Man is strictly a supporting character in terms of the movies now. He's going to be in Avengers, he might be in Captain America, that sort of thing.
Right. Well, he's got to be in Civil War.
Yeah, I think there's one more Thor.
Yeah, there's one more Thor.
Trying to think what else there is. Might be a couple other things, but... not coming to mind. So Thor, Avengers, another Ant-Man. And maybe they'll bring Guardians of the Galaxy in for the Thanos storyline.
Oh, they need to. If they can't leave Thanos out. That makes no sense. Avengers 3 comes out 2018.
Okay, so we've got a couple of years.
Avengers 2.
So it'll probably be Captain America 3, Thor 3, and then Avengers 3. Right?
Well, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, but that's really not in the Avengers, you know, storyline so far.
Oh, yeah. But you would think that with Infinity War coming up, they would tie it in somehow.
It would be interesting.
Because it's 1 year apart from Infinity War Part 1.
Yeah. I think it'd be good to tie them in. But so far, what did we see at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy? Did Thanos show up? I can't remember anymore.
The very end?
Yeah. Past the credits.
It was Howard the Duck.
Oh, Howard the Duck, yeah.
Right, so he's sitting down and goes, why do you let him do that?
Yeah.
You know, the dog licking...
Right. The Russian cosmonaut dog.
Yeah. Did the Collector have a name? He had a name.
In the movie? I mean, in the comic books?
In the movie, he had a name. Yeah, because they called him by a name.
Not coming to mind. Okay, so there we go. Ant-Man, the movie, it's been a couple of weeks, actually almost a month and a half, so we were full of spoilers. Sorry if you actually haven't seen it yet. You should have. It's a good movie. Is it still playing? I don't think so, right?
Oh, sure it is.
It is? Sure. Like at a smaller theater or something?
Let me see.
But in any case... That brings to an end Comics News Podcast number 74. We had a bit of a 6-week delay between podcasts, but we'll try to be a little bit more regular. Next up, not really sure, but maybe we can talk about Man from U.N.C.L.E. Did you go see that, Jay?
No, I want to see it, but then I saw the reviews and how it was more stylish than substance, but...
I enjoyed it.
You saw it?
I saw it. I would recommend it.
Well, Ant-Man is still playing.
Okay.
Regal Wynwood Stadium 10.
All right. So somewhere in the world, wherever you are, there's Ant-Man's probably still playing. Go see it.
Oh, a lot of places. It's at a lot of places.
If not, I'm sure it'll be on the various, Amazon Prime and iTunes and Google Play. You will probably enjoy it, even if you've never read the comic book. Any comic book with Ant-Man in it, I think you'll enjoy it. So it's really a fun movie. Alrighty, next up then, maybe we'll talk about Man from U.N.C.L.E. if you have had time to see it. If not, we'll probably start focusing on individual comic book issues. I thought that might be kind of interesting, and Jay and I will figure out what we both like or have both read, and we can discuss in terms of continuity and that sort of thing. So that's it. It's been a little bit of a hiatus, but this is fun. So thumbs up from both Jay and me for Ant-Man, which agrees with both the critics and the audience. And even though Jay and I didn't see Fantastic Four, we're giving it a thumbs down anyway, just because.